Hello and welcome to Stockwatch. And it's been a week with inflation top of mind, rising costs, supply chain bottlenecks, all rattling nerves about what this recovery picture is going to look like, especially if higher interest rates are going to have to become a reality sooner rather than later. Joining me to take a look at how much sense our analysts top stocks make at the moment is Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments and independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha as well. Welcome to you both and thanks so much for joining us this evening. I'm going to get straight into things with Merrill Pick's hot stock lined up first, Sasol.
Although it has more than doubled off the bottoms of last year, I still think it has got more to go, particularly if these oil prices hold. We see earnings of about 40 Rand a share for next year. Historically, it used to trade in a PE of 10. Even if you put in some discount for the ESG, climate change overhang, you still should get a valuation of between 320 and 360, which means there's upside from here. And that is not actually using today's spot oil price of 80 Rand. So I think they have come up with some longer term plans to address some of the climate change issues. And I think the coal price and the oil price have shown us that although we do need to decarbonize, the path to get there is going to be very slow. And at this point in time, the world still requires fossil fuels.
Jimmy, how much value does Sasol still present in your books and how much more upside potential do you see coming through here?
Well, I think Sasol definitely does present a very attractive investment. I mean, it's been attractive since it got as low as 20 Rand in the pandemic off the back of those oil prices. I think what we're looking at the moment, though, is we've seen the stock reach highs of 600 Rand a share. And to sit at about 280 Rand a share at the moment, I think I might want to wait just a little bit to see if we get a buyback around the 250 Rand mark. But I definitely can see how we can get above the 300 Rand mark. I mean, in October this month alone, we have touched that 300 Rand mark. I think what's going to be critical to look at from Sasol's perspective is going to be that oil demand, as we rightly mentioned earlier. But what's interesting with Sasol and where they differ from some of the other companies is when we went into lockdown and all those oil prices dropped and we saw Sasol take that big knock, they were diversifying their business already. So they diversified out of being heavily reliant on oil and that sort of thing, and they diversified into the chemicals business. They got their Lake Charles project online. They did manage to sell off some of that project as well. So they structured their business at a very critical time for their business, and that's why we saw them rebound from that 20 Rand a mark to sit around the 300 Rand mark where they are. So I think we can definitely see some upside to it. Whether or not we'll see that 320 to 360 before the end of the year remains to be seen.
Okay, Chantal, on your side, let's talk ESG risk here. Is there an overestimation, underestimation of that risk at this stage?
So I think the risks are balanced at this point in time because you do have the ESG risk perhaps weighing on something like investor sentiment. But in terms of absolute demand for their products and for fossil fuel products in general, it's still probably going to continue to increase as the world electrifies, as the world uses more electricity and requires more energy. That renewable transition is absolutely happening, but absolute demand for oil and coal is still increasing. And a company like Sasol, as it is slowly trying to navigate some sort of a transition to a net zero type strategy, is probably quite well positioned to benefit from both, to be honest.
Yeah. Chantal, I've got to ask, have you been riding this wave up to this point?
Yes, I'm a very happy holder of Sasol. Thank you very much.
On your side, Jimmy?
Yes, certainly.
Okay. So it was a hard one to ignore. If you haven't jumped on the boat yet, not too late perhaps, but how's a player like Sasol stacking up against the likes of a Total? Here's the investment incentive Graham Frank laid out for Total.
The energy space just generally, and maybe this is a good time just to say my stock pick was going to be Total, the international oil stock, but at the end of the day, global oil prices will lift all of these oil plays. So Sasol, absolutely we would, and we think rising inflation will be key for the oil and the energy markets, and we think that that will continue to buoy up the likes of a Sasol and a Total, specifically on Total, that's trading on a PE of 8.5 times and a dividend yield of 6.5%. So that whole space is looking reasonably attractive to us at the moment.
Jimmy, is it becoming increasingly trickier to pinpoint and select one of these? I mean, do you have to just delve in and have a little bit everywhere?
Well, I think that's where we're going in terms of just global investing. We're seeing that investment trends are changing. We're seeing the types of companies people are choosing to invest in, your greener type companies, your companies that are taking your ESG more seriously. And a company like Total that's now outlined that they want to diversify their business. They've been very clear about how they want to do it. I mean, they've been very clear about saying they want to go into hydrocarbons. They want at least 25% of their business to be renewables. They've spoken about things like hydrogen, biomass, wind and solar fuels and those sorts of power generation. Companies like that are going to be companies that are going to be attractive as we go into the future. We've seen another investment trend that sort of developed over this COVID period and post-COVID period is companies with stronger balance sheets are acquiring more. Companies with non-performing assets are selling off those assets in favor of diversifying their business into more profit-generating areas. So a company like Total is well-balanced at the moment, and they're looking to spread out their risk or their reliance or income reliance from one source and looking to sustain and grow into the future as we head into sort of a new age of energy.
Okay, so strong fundamentals are being laid out there that's supportive of this business, Chantal, from a fundamental perspective, but also from a valuation basis. How's Total stacking up against the likes of a Sasol?
So, I mean, I would be a little bit more circumspect when it comes to valuation because these companies are very, very cyclical, and it's very difficult to predict oil prices, and it's very difficult to predict currencies. So when it comes to valuation, you have to find something that you are super comfortable with, and you have to also place a level of probability on those earnings estimates actually coming through. Total, I think, is actually one of those companies where earnings estimates look quite decent. They look quite conservative. So it would be something that I'm a little bit more comfortable with. But Sasol actually looks cheaper if you look at it from a relative valuation perspective. That said, Total, as I mentioned, higher probability of earnings being correct, and it's got a little bit more of a cohesive plan for the future. So it's got a plan for every year up until 2050. Sasol's making headways, but they're just not there yet.
Okay, but we've got broad-based consensus filtering through up to this point. Let's, amidst it all, take a look at something out of that space. What's an investment in the likes of an online retailer looking like? Kwame Antwi seems to think pretty good if you're looking at the likes of a Boohoo.
An online retailer, which basically plays in the e-commerce space. It's got solid structural growth. It's one of the fastest growing retailers in the market. It has had a bit of a difficult time, and that's mainly due to cost pressures that has faced as a result of the supply chain constraints. Mm-hmm. We expect that to ease, and we expect margins to recover. It's got a rock-solid balance sheet, and we think this is a good buying opportunity.
Jimmy, so we're well aware of the kind of impetus COVID has provided for online retailers across the board, right, and the kind of momentum that they've now gotten into. But amidst all the concern about supply chain constraints, there are clearly those more confident in how soon those are going to ease and how quickly that's going to translate to margins starting to recover. Are you as convinced?
Well, the supply chain constraints, I mean, much as you can sort of plan for that and plan to have those alleviated. As Chantal rightly mentioned, that certain areas within businesses, if there's not a cohesive structure or rollout for that business, you might see that might lag. You might see that certain plans that you might put in place might not come to fruition in your timeline. For me, that's the one side of it. The other side of it that I want to look at from an e-commerce perspective is that e-commerce businesses are on the rise. We've seen a significant increase in e-commerce businesses. And what you need in this day and age, if you're going to go into the e-commerce space, is you need a differentiating factor. You need a differentiating edge. You're competing with the likes of Amazon, competing with the likes of Takealot, and those sorts of businesses where they found their niche, they found their edge, but you're also now competing with retailers themselves that are able to go online. So we saw that coming into the pandemic and in the height of the pandemic, companies were unable to sort of offer services to in-house stores and that sort of thing. We saw people didn't visit malls as often and that sort of thing. And we saw some retailers go in and say, you can now shop with us online, you can now pay your accounts online and that sort of thing in an effort to stay competitive. Now, you've got those companies that are now going to invest more heavily into their own online presence, and you've got companies like Boohoo that are then going to have to say, okay, but what makes us different from these other companies? How what's our standout strategy? I mean, Boohoo's announced things like partnering with Megan Fox on one of her clothing lines and that sort of thing. They've also announced partnering with a company in Canada called Ooh around video streaming and that sort of thing for their shopping experiences. So I think they do have certain elements that they think would give them a competitive edge. But I think for an e-commerce space, that's going to be your strategy and your rollout are going to become so much more critical as that space continues to grow.
How much of a problem or a concern is that when it comes to how this translates to margins and then eventually your bottom line, Chantal, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, Boohoo's differentiating factor for me is the fact that you can buy a dress for £3. I mean, that's just super, super cheap. It's like the wish of the British Isles. But the problem is that there's a natural demand, particularly from teenagers and students who have low budgets for clothing, but they want something highly fashionable. You have revenue growing super fast. They haven't really had any issues on their margins. But the big question mark for me around this company is how ethical and moral is their production line. There have been some pretty serious allegations around modern slavery and unfair business practices, and that's a big red flag for me. So, I mean, yeah, they'll continue to push the marketing angle. They'll continue to say the right things, but I'm more than being concerned about margins. I'm concerned about whether or not their thinking is in the right place. And I just don't like investing in a stock that makes me feel a little bit dirty. So, not one for me.
And it moves then beyond the coal arena, I guess, when you talk about those stocks that make you feel that way. Well, in this world where, yes, we're headed in the digitization direction anyway, even pre-COVID, but where digitization and that imperative has been enhanced and boosted, MTS Suleiman says Accenture is a hard one to ignore.
I'm going for Accenture, which is a global consulting company listed in the US. If you look at what they do, is essentially work with companies, and it's more with the larger companies in general, trying to optimize their processes as companies digitize. And from that perspective, they've done very well throughout the COVID crisis. And I think you're going to see a continuation of digitization from companies as they look to transform and streamline their processes, where Accenture is essentially very well positioned to partner with companies and transition their processes to a more digital world.
Jimmy, is it hard to fault this one?
It's not very hard to fault it. I mean, we are definitely heading into an age of technological advancement and digitization of industries and that sort of thing. I think an initial concern or something that I would want to look at from this sort of space is a lot of Accenture's business is now focused on software as a service, focused on cloud solutioning and that sort of thing. And around that, the natural thing that comes up is data security, the prevention of systems being hacked, and how secure the information is when it is sitting within the cloud servers and those sorts of things. So I think those sorts of areas are where I'd want to look for a company like Accenture. But in addition to that, you want to look at things like the fact that we're heading into the business model that they're proposing is somewhat of a highly skilled space. And they've said that some of their data centers will also be skills development centers because they understand the need for equipping people with the skills to actually use their product. And for me, that's a big thing as well, is you can't have a company that says we want to digitize everything, but nobody knows how to actually digitize it and how digitization works and how it'll benefit particularly things like state entities and that sort of thing. I mean, they've also outlined Accenture that they want to focus on state entities as well. So for me, I want to see how they're addressing the concerns that might come up around data security and that sort of thing, as well as the practical side of how they plan to improve the skill set of those that work for them.
Absolutely. On your side, Chantal, how much of a concern is that for you? I mean, we always talk about this skills deficit locally. Accenture is, broad-based, though, and has quite a footprint. Is it a concern?
We have a skilled labor shortage worldwide at the moment. I mean, labor shortage and labor shortages are kind of driving inflation as well. It's one of those big concerns in the US as well as in the UK, although I think that you could actually probably put a little bit of a Brexit cough on the side when you're talking about labor shortages in the UK. But in high tech and in kind of the digital space, it's really not any exception. They have a very high rate of attrition as well, because the skills that they do have within their consulting team are very high in demand. And I think that that's something that they're going to battle with. Still, I do think that the business model makes sense. The skills that they offer and the expertise that they offer are in high demand. And it's also one that I am actually quite comfortable with at the moment.
So we've been hearing about the buy the dippers of late, and there were a few market watchers this week finding value now in what have been beaten down shares, but for a myriad of reasons beyond just the COVID impact that they now start to see value in. Let's take a listen to Mia Kruger.
The government coming out and saying that they won't be allowing any government tender programs to be built with imported cement. So that's been a great news flow for PPC. I mean, PPC was really down in the dumps the last couple of years. They traded below 50 cents a share. It's now up over 5 rand a share.
Yeah.
So you've really made like 1,000 percent on your investment if you bought there. But even if you just held the share from previous levels, you're probably still above water if you invested in the last 2 or so years.
Yeah.
The fact is that this has been a tough road for PPC. They've done a lot of hard work to reduce their debt. They've been a very indebted company over the last couple of years due to the fact that their operations struggle to make money.
Yeah.
But this is a great opportunity for them.
So Chantal, did you delve in below 50 cents? And have they done enough work for you to now delve in, I guess?
I was not lucky enough to delve in. I was laughing at my husband for delving in and giving him a very hard time. He's also in the financial services industry. And I would say you are buying a stock that's super indebted. It doesn't have a competitive advantage. You have a problem with dumping. And there we go. And they're solving their problem with debt. And they are solving their problem with dumping. And suddenly you have an infrastructure rollout that actually seems to be gaining steam. You have shovel-ready product being gazetted. And you have a very high quality product that I think will continue to probably stand the test of time. So, I mean, I think it looks a lot better. Whether or not there's a lot in it near term is still difficult for me to get a handle on. But if I were holding it, I would probably be comfortable to continue holding it.
Well, hopefully you derive some benefit from your husband's bet there. Jimmy, on your side?
Well, I too didn't get in at 50 cents. And that was a lot to do with some of the factors that Chantal mentioned as well. But also, I think at the moment, and this is also probably going to still keep me on the fence about it for now, is the construction space. We've had reports in the past around construction cartels being problematic and that sort of thing. We've seen that infrastructure rollout plans from the government, while fantastic in policy and in theory, have lacked implementation. So for me, it's going to be the announcement is a good announcement that imported cement is no longer going to be allowed for certain things. And the business as well, I mean, PPC came from 40 Rand highs in around 2007. So there is value in the stock. But again, for now, I want to see more around where the demand is going to come from. Is the demand going to come from a pickup in construction? Yeah. Are we going to go into further lockdowns that are going to prohibit the construction space from continuing to develop and that sort of thing? And we've also seen a shift in terms of some of the construction areas as well. I mean, in the past, we used to see huge commercial buildings coming up and that sort of thing. And what we've seen from companies like GrowthPoint is they've got all of these buildings and now the buildings are standing vacant. Going into a post-COVID world, is there going to be, in South Africa in particular, yes, there's a demand for infrastructure of a certain quality, but is that infrastructure demand going to be matched by a construction output, but also is it going to be matched in line with the policies that the government has for years said we want to implement, but to date has failed to implement. And so for now, I'm also on the fence about PPC.
Jimmy, I know you highlight demand concern here, and I haven't honestly done a deep dive on this, but are there any concerns from a supply perspective whether PPC would be up to the task completely?
So for the moment, I think that's going to be relative to what we see in terms of demand. For the moment, PPC has got significant supply to sort of meet their short-term obligations. They've got new facilities. I think they've got about 2.1 billion rand in new facilities from banks and other financial institutions locally. So if they need to ramp up supply and they need to ramp up production quite quickly and they need to go tap into financial reserves from that perspective, I think they should be okay. But I think it'll come down to whether or not that demand is realistic, whether or not that demand is realized, and whether or not the construction sector recovers as we've seen it suffer throughout this COVID period.
Okay, I'm going to try and squeeze two in here. So we're going to be quick on the next two. I have to insert Devin Schutzpeck here before we head into our other low-hanging fruit, because it ties in with what Mia highlighted, standing as a potential benefactor of the government's stance. Ital Tile.
Manufacturer and distributor of tiles, a great little integrated vertically. And I think also what I like about it, like we've seen the cement indigenization protocol being put in by Treasury, that could extend in time to kind of sanitary ware and tiles. And Ital Tile could be a direct beneficiary of that.
I said we'll get to the other low-hanging fruit in just a bit, because Ital Tile managing through COVID to derive benefit of DIY and home renovations that have been happening. So it really hasn't slumped, but I thought speaks to the theme of just how many supporting factors are now coming and working in its favor, Chantal.
Yeah, Ital Tile's it's a really great, well-run business. It's vertically integrated, as David mentioned, which means that they own their own manufacturing capability as well. They do import some of their tiles into their more niche brands, but in some of the other brands, like, for example, CTM, most of it is manufactured locally. So even if you are dealing with supply chain issues and delays at ports, you're not going to see a company like this disrupted by something like that. Added to that, they are excellent in terms of cash generation. Their balance sheet is in really good nick, and you do have the heightened probability of at least some sort of recovery in the construction sector coming through as the pent-up demand from lockdown starts easing in the home and DIY space. So I think it's very well positioned and it probably deserves a bit of attention.
Okay, so on your side, Jimmy, yay or nay?
For me, it's going to be a nay, actually. So I'm looking at the fact that it's trading at all-time highs. I want to see what Ital Tile is going to perform like outside of the demand for home renovations and once that's eased up. I mean, what we've seen is we went through that big boom where everybody was at home, everybody was doing home improvements, everybody was building home offices, improving their living spaces and that sort of thing, and that really drove demand in that space. But coming out of a pandemic like that, as everybody starts to return to work, some people are being mandated to return to work in line with their companies, are we going to see that demand continued? I mean, Ital Tile has sort of two main areas, your retail sector and your manufacturing sector. And as Chantal mentioned, the fact that they own their own supply chain and they're vertically integrated is fantastic from that perspective in terms of avoiding future disruptions. But for now, I think you could actually get sort of better value out of other stocks just because of where Ital Tile is priced at the moment. I mean, they're priced at about 16 Rand. I would look at around 14 Rand for a buy, but I still think certain other picks might give you a better return on investment in the short term.
Okay, that's exactly what makes a market. You've got the pros and the cons there. We had Chris Gilmore in the meantime say he's going with City Lodge.
You know, a number of things. We've talked about the leisure market. I think we're going to see a good Christmas season. I don't think we're going to see any more lockdowns. I think the vaccination rollout is going to carry on apace and going very, very nicely. We're also going to see corporates starting to travel an awful lot more. Yes, the bean counters in head office are going to say, well, you can't travel, you can do Zoom and Teams and stuff. But there is a limit to what you can do with that. Yeah. And I think they're itching to get back into the field. So I think, you know, you're sitting at such a huge discount. It's not so long ago that City Lodge was at 50 rands a share. And currently, around about 5 rands a share. To me, I can see huge potential in this one.
Jimmy, is it trading at enough of a discount to entice you?
I'm already in City Lodge, so yes. the discount was too great to ignore. I mean, the hospitality and leisure sector has taken the biggest hit following COVID. They've been struggling to rebound. Lockdowns have continued to hamper that and that sort of thing. What we've seen, though, is if you look at stocks like Sun International, you look at stocks like Tsoho Sun, those are all trading at discounted lows. I mean, I'm in Tsoho Sun, for example, from 6 Rand, and it's already at 11 Rand. And City Lodge represents something of another interest for me. I mean, 2018 highs were around 35 Rand. And as we see the reopening of the leisure sector, we see that the South Africa has been taken off of the UK red list. We see that those factors are starting to all line up to a greater improvement in the hospitality space. I think City Lodge could stand to benefit from it. From a technical standpoint, you look at the price and there's no real significant resistance until 23 Rand. So even if you're not looking to go back to the all-time highs of 35 Rand that we saw in 2018, if you hold City Lodge from 5 Rand just up to 15 Rand, that's 3 times what you've bought in for, and you're still not at all-time high. So for me, it's the discount is too good to give up.
Okay, Chantal, quickly, do you have the upper hand on Javi on this one?
I mean, I think that obviously the best time to have gotten in was the rights offer, but now it's actually returned something. It's made quite decent returns. One just mustn't forget that the rights offer happened, right? So it was a very big, very dilutive rights offer, which means that 35 Rand is unlikely to ever be seen again. But I think that you still have it trading at a discount relative to its property values. It's got a very large fixed cost base, which means that once occupancy start picking up, that money will filter straight to the bottom line. So I still see worth in it. Just trade carefully and don't forget about the rights offer.
Got you. Let's leave it there. Thank you both for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments and independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha as well. And that's a wrap for Stockwatch this week. We'll see you again, same time, same place next week. For now, have a great weekend.